Well, it's the day after the July 4th weekend. We as Americans love our freedom. Are we losing our freedoms? Are we still a free nation?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Land of the free and the home of the brave. I said some time ago we were becoming the home of the depraved. I'm sure others said it. But what about land of the free? I just posted on our Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page a graphic. National Security Agency, the average person is captured on camera 20 times per day. How free are we? Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire this Monday after the July 4th weekend. If you missed our show on Friday, we were live, and we did a special interview with my friends Yesu Padam and Monica from India. It was stirring, encouraging, life-giving, revolutionary in the best sense of the word. So be sure to tune in and catch that. Just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, and click on Latest Audio. Also, I wrote an article over the weekend. I'll share more about that in a moment, Renouncing Jewish Jihad. That'll be listed shortly as my latest article online. There's a lot I want to talk to you about. I want to catch up with some news. By the way, this is just shocking as we think about casualties overseas and other questions. I do want to talk to you about issues having to do with illegal immigration, a lot of things that are really shaking our nation right now. But I'm looking at a headline that says 11 killed, 60 wounded in Chicagoland over the holiday. This points to some great needs within our own nation in terms of quality of life, in terms of family, and many, many other things. You know, you can lose freedom from the inside. You can lose freedom from the outside. Right now, in my view, the biggest threat to America is not from the outside, but from the inside. Do you agree? The biggest threat is not being invaded by foreign countries or China or Russia ganging up together against us. The biggest threat, aside from the fact if they pulled their money out, if China and oil-rich Arab nations and others pulled their money out of America, we'd have a complete financial collapse, and that would trigger theirs as well. But aside from that, our internal freedoms are being lost. When we are slaves to other things, or when there's an assault on our freedoms of religion and speech and conscience, I say the bigger threat is from the inside. 866-34-TRUTH. So I've got a couple of questions I want to put out there for you, all right? And I want to get your feedback today. Number one, the revelations of the degree that our privacies are being monitored, our private lives are being monitored, our emails seen more than we might imagine, the constant cameras that are on the road, NSA perhaps intruding far more than we might have thought. Is that okay with you? Because after all, the more security cameras, the better chance we have of capturing those who are going to run off with a child. The more security cameras we have, the better we can capture some culprit who knocks a person out just walking by, punches him in the face and walks off. The more security cameras we have, the better we can be protected. And look, people may listen into some of our conversations or emails, but they're going to catch more terrorists. They're going to try to kill us and blow us up. First question for you, is that okay with you? You feel that's good, that's necessary, that's important? Or is this an infringement on our freedoms? Is this going the way of a police state like George Orwell's Big Brother in 1984? Also, recent survey, according to voters or those who responded, President Obama is our worst president in several generations. I wonder what you think about that. 866-34-TRUTH.
fire we
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast, 866-348-7884. I want to reflect on the issue of our freedoms here in America. I believe that the most fundamental value to which most Americans adhere, the most fundamental value that we say is most important, the one thing that we do not want to surrender as Americans is our freedom. From the Declaration of Independence to the Liberty Bell to Patrick Henry's Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death to Martin Luther King's We Are Determined to Be Free, this, in my view, is the most fundamental value, the most fundamental thing we prize in America. And when we see our freedoms being threatened, when we see our independence being threatened, this to me is something that stirs us deeply. Now, we may react more if finances were affected. You know what I'm saying? In other words, we may react more if there is a complete collapse in the economy. Other things may make us react more, but I would say our country is founded on the importance of freedom, and freedom and individual rights remain tremendously important to us as Americans. So how do you feel if the Snowden, revelations are true, if the NSA has been as intrusive as he claims? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Is this for our security? Is this for our good that the government may have a lot more access to our private lives, to our emails, to our phone calls, that security cameras, constant pictures being taken, and that's separate from NSA, some may interface here and there. Is that for our protection? Is that for our good? Is that going to help us in terms of, hey, by keeping out terrorists, by exposing terrorists, by finding out who's trying to infiltrate and hurt and destroy, that, in fact, this is going to keep us safer and preserve our liberties? Or is this something you're not willing to give up in order to have those alleged liberties? Is it intrusive? Is there government takeover behind this? Look, you know, if you listen to the show regularly, we are not a conservative talk radio show. I don't get on the air every day and just talk politics. I certainly don't get on the air every day and bash the president or bash the Democrats or bash the Republicans, whatever the case would be. But as we look at other larger issues that have to do with our freedoms, there is the question of government overreach. Look, the Supreme Court has shot down a number of President Obama's recent efforts, executive orders, Obamacare, part of that shot down, some executive order shot down. No, you cannot go that far. And many are concerned that the president, who keeps issuing executive orders, saying, hey, doesn't matter, you're not going to act on it, I'm going to act on it. And of course, the rhetoric is heating up as House Speaker John Boehner has said, all right, the time has come where we are going to have to sue the president. And again, we're talking about freedom. We're talking about executive orders. We're talking about overreach. And House Speaker John Boehner said he doesn't take lightly his decision to file a lawsuit against President Obama's executive actions. This is what he said in the Sunday editorial, offering a little more rationale for his extraordinary spin on checks and balances than the president's, quote, flippant dismissal of the Constitution we are both sworn to defend. Boehner said the Constitution makes it clear that the president's job is to faithfully execute the laws. And in my view, the president has not faithfully executed the laws when it comes to a range of issues, including his health care law, energy regulations, foreign policy, and education. Joey, get clip number six ready. And, I'll come back to clip number six. Hang on there. But President Obama does not seem to be backing down at all. Do you think this is a good thing? Hey, somebody's got to take action. Somebody's got to stand up. Somebody's got to do what's right. Are you saying, are you kidding me? This completely destroys the whole system of checks and balances that we have. Are you aware that the president has said he's issuing an executive order in terms of end of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which would say that you cannot, as a company, discriminate based on sexual orientation or gender identity? So theoretically, you could have, say, a Christian bookstore, and maybe you have an employee who is flamingly, outwardly, loudly gay and wants everyone to know it. Well, that practicing homosexual, that would violate your moral convictions as a Christian bookstore. Would you be able to fire that person? Excuse me, or would that be sexual discrimination based on sexual orientation? Or if you have a nursery school and there is a man who is a is a cross-dresser, and this is where he identifies at this point, would you be able to say, no, we're not hiring you? Or would that be discrimination based on gender identity? A number of faith-based leaders have written to the president saying you need to give, if you're going to make this executive order, you need to give more space. You need to give more room to religious groups. And some of these are fairly liberal, or they've been supporting Obama. Those, they're not just right-wing groups. They're not just conservative Christian groups or leaders. One is Joel Hunter, who's been a supporter of the president, basically a pastor to the president. They are calling on him to modify things and to with deference to religious groups. And they're saying you are going too far. What do you think? Are we losing our freedoms? In fact, let's play clip number 6. This is the president's response to Boehner's threat to sue the president, to bring a lawsuit against the president of the United States.
Middle-class families can't wait for Republicans in Congress to do stuff. So sue me.
Again, you know me. I'm not one to have endless shows bashing the president. He is not a major subject of the broadcast, although we pray for him. And we pray for God to get hold of his heart and life, that he would shine for righteousness and justice and equity and would do the right thing. But when you hear that attitude, first to just blame it on Republicans in Congress, which is so bogus, playing such a political game. All right, if you want to blame it on Congress as a whole and say Congress is stalled, but there are enough opportunities with different majorities to get certain things done that haven't been done. For the president to say, well, I'm just going to do it if Congress doesn't, based on what power? Based on what authority? Is there not overreach taking place on a very, very serious level? What about what he said, what our president has said he is going to do in terms of immigration? And I don't know what news sources you go to. I go to a number of different ones. A lot of conservatives will go to Drudge Report because it just gives headlines. But I'm looking now at immigration-related headlines just highlighted in the upper left of Drudge. So aside from the main middle story, this is the next most prominent. And I'm seeing, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, maybe 20, if I count it right. Some may overlap. 20 headlines about immigration, border breakdown, Dreamer deportations drop, third group of migrants arrive in California, feds to bring in riot squad against protesters, showdown might get ugly, Murrieta mayor, feds never contacted about dumping, LAPD will longer comply on immigration hold requests. That doesn't seem right. Viva La Raza, border protection chief, these are not dangerous individuals. Rick Perry, Obama either inept or doesn't care, some on right push to impeach. Backlash stirs against foreign worker visas, militia group heading to border, agent contracts, scabies. 40 infected immigrants transported to California released into population, question mark. Tuberculosis spreading at camps. Government buses idle near border. 500 released every day. Border Patrol officials under gag order. I mean, you're talking what looks like absolute chaos. And who opened the floodgates? Who opened the floodgates for this to be happening? Who's responsible? And how does this affect freedoms? A bunch of questions to think about and talk about. A whole lot more I do want to talk to you about. What's our approach? What's our revolutionary approach? What's our approach in the spirit of the founding fathers, but as followers of Jesus? 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The only holdout standing in the way of change for tens of millions of Americans are some Republicans in Congress.
If you're mad at me for helping people on my own, then why don't you join me and we'll do it together?
All right. To me, counterproductive. Counterproductive. To go and blame the Republicans again. Immigration issues have been mounting for years. It is a complex problem. Some of it's not complex. On the one hand, we have a leaky border and lots of folks get into America that have no business being in America based on Mexican law and American law. Others have lived here for many years, have been hardworking folks contributing to the common good, have raised kids here. How do we address those issues? Those are the larger questions. How much of this is just political? How much is this simply a matter of simply a matter of the president or the Democrats saying, hey, the more legal immigrants we get in, the more Democratic voters we'll have because they will be government dependent and they will be looking to us a certain way. And then the president says, well, he's just going to take executive action. Matt, clip 11, that's the attorney weighing in. So, Joey, let's play clip number 11. This is CNN legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin. As President Obama has said, listen, you're not going to take action on immigrants, then I will just take action. Now, remember, this is not Fox News. This is not someone that's just going to be bashing the president. This is CNN legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin. So what he has to say.
One of the lines that sort of jumped out at me, he said, and I'm paraphrasing, but a close paraphrase, I take these executive actions when we have a problem and Congress refuses to act. Well, that's not necessarily the way the Constitution set it up.
Ah, exactly. I have looked at some of the executive orders when they have intersected with issues that concern me on a moral basis, issues that concern burdens that I have, the overreach with Obamacare and the unfair imposition on businesses. Again, Supreme Court decided in favor of Hobby Lobby as a Christian-owned business against aspects of Obamacare. There have been other smaller decisions along the way. But hey, let's remember that was a 5-4 vote. And the three female justices expressed, well, some would say outrage with the decision. This could easily tip. You're talking about something that theoretically should have been a 9-0 vote in terms of religious freedoms, especially the Religious Freedoms Act, what's called RFRA. This should have been a slam dunk easy decision, but things have shifted so much in so many ways that these things are now hotly contested. That to me is government overreach. And then when I see the president said, well, fine, you're not going to do anything with ENDA, with Employment Non-Discrimination Act, including sexual orientation and gender identity, then I'll just do it by executive order or Attorney General Holder saying, listen, to state attorneys general, if you don't like the law in your state concerning marriage that the people voted for and that upholds what we've always had in our country, if you don't like it, you don't have to defend it. That to me is an outrage. That to me is anything but justice. That to me is government overreach and an exact one of the very things that our government set up, our checks and balances, was put in place to avoid. 866-34-TRUTH. One more clip and then we will go to the phones. This is Congressman Dick Durbin speaking. Clip number 12. Let's hear what he has to say in terms of the president's executive orders and House Speaker Boehner's threats to sue the president.
I don't know how much more time he thinks he needs, but I hope that Speaker Boehner will speak up today. And if he does not, the president will borrow the power that is needed to solve the problems of immigration.
So the president is just going to take the power he has and fix immigration. This to me is scary, not in terms of, oh no, what are we going to do? God is God. He rules and reigns. He's king. But in terms of the direction this administration is taking, that's why people are talking about impeachment. That's how far it is going. Let's go to the phones, beginning with Donald in Bloomfield, New Jersey. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, I'd like to know that if Mr. Boehner does go ahead and sue the president, who pays if the president loses? If there's a financial fee or something like that, he's just going to take it from the citizens of the country anyway to pay the fee. So where's the losing in that?
It has nothing to do with a fee, sir. In other words, this is not like a normal law case or lawsuit where I accuse you of extorting money from my company and now I'm going to sue you for damage. No, this is a matter of stopping someone. That's the issue. It's not trying to hurt the president or the nation financially. It's to say you do not have the right to do what you are doing. That's what it would come down to. So that's where the suing comes into play.
You really don't think he doesn't know he doesn't have the right? But the thing is, because of his executive authority, he's already made himself king. He'll do whatever he can get away with as long as he can get away with it. And if you sue him and say, slap him on the hand and say, you can't do that, they'll say, okay, I'll try this then.
Right. Well, that's the whole thing. The Supreme Court has now slapped him on the hand in several different ways, actually. The Supreme Court really cut back on a number of his powers. Well, look, you have checks and balances. In other words, he can give an executive order, but if it can't be enforced because the law is against it and the courts are saying it can't be done, what's he going to do? You know, send out the militia and try to make it happen? Obviously not. But Donald, you raise concerns that many others have, that the president is not functioning as a president and he has now moved outside of the bounds of what is legal, hence the threat of a lawsuit. Well, thank you for the call. Friends, it's time for the church to rise up as a prophetic voice to the nation. Do I mean damning everyone to hell and shouting and screaming on the street corners? No, I mean speaking for God to the nation, calling our nation to account before God, whether our nation believes in him or not, speaking with a way that represents the mind and will of God. I think of the prophet Jeremiah. Now, Israel was a theocracy, so things must be applied. America is not a theocracy. But as I spent years writing a commentary on the book of Jeremiah, principles unfolded for us as believers, for pastors, for leaders. We've put a special resource package together this week. My Jeremiah commentary, which is 550 pages, it comes together with a commentary in Ezekiel and Lamentations, over 900 pages total. Plus, I've included two DVDs teaching on the book of Jeremiah, not available to the general public. The retail value, about $70. This week, postage paid, $50, the commentary and the 2 hours of DVD teaching. And you stand with us as we seek to be your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978 or go to my website.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Now, Congress has been considering legislation to protect LGBT workers for decades. I want you to understand, for decades. Last November, it finally looked like we were getting somewhere. The Senate passed ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, had strong bipartisan support. But shockingly enough, the House refused to act. And that's why I've directed my staff to prepare for my signature an executive order prohibiting discrimination by federal contractors on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity.
Could it be, sir, that the House also representing the nation? Mr. Obama, they were appointed. Mr. President, they were appointed by the people to do a certain job. And if the people have problems with given legislation, if the people have problems with legislation as worded, if the people feel that by accepting certain things or endorsing certain things or granting liberty in one area, it will take away liberty in another area, if they felt language was not properly nuanced, it is their job as representatives to say no to the president, whoever the president is, if it's Democrats representing their constituency or Republicans representing theirs or independents representing theirs, or it's a Republican, Democrat, or independent in the White House, it doesn't matter. Those elected officials are supposed to be standing up for their constituencies, and that's the check and balance that we have in our system. Of course, the president can veto a bill, and then do they have enough votes to override that veto? That means there needs to be an even stronger basis for it. But let's remember, friends, that politicians are elected officials, and those that want to be career politicians still know that if they don't represent what their constituencies want, they'll be voted out. If they don't stand up for what their constituencies feel is right, they'll be voted out. So the president is basically saying, I don't care about what the American people have said, or I don't care about what the constituencies have said in the House with the majority being Republican. I don't care about the fact that as they are representing their constituencies have problems with this legislation the way it's worded. I don't care. I'm going to sign it into law because I have an agenda. That, friends, is outrageous. That is an abuse of power. And again, what's the context for this? What's the background for this announcement? It's in the midst of the White House reception celebrating LGBT Pride Month, Gay Pride Month, now LGBT Pride Month. And why is it in June? Because that's when the Stonewall riots happened in June of 1969. When protesters fought back violently against the police, gay and transgender protesters fought back violently against the police. These were riots now commemorated in the White House with this administration. Now the White House saying, hey, Congress hasn't acted. Of course, going to blame the Republicans. It's their fault. They haven't acted. So I'm going to take the law into my own hands, regardless of what you think. It went so far that, again, as I mentioned in the last half hour, other groups, faith-related groups who are not known for being strongly conservative or Republican, they wrote together, some of whom campaigned for President Obama's election or reelection. They wrote to the president and said, you need to give broader religious exemptions. And groups like the ACLU are saying the exemption should not be there at all, or they should be very, very narrow. This is an abuse of power. This is a direct attack on our freedoms. I'll be right back. 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast, 866-348-7884. What do you feel are the greatest threats to our national freedoms today in America? I know national freedoms, that's a big term that encompasses many, many different things. But what do you think are the greatest threats to our national freedoms today? If America is going to stay a free nation, what are the greatest threats to our freedoms? 866-34-TRUTH. Just want you to hear one other thing. We've talked about the president's executive orders. We've talked about the immigration issues as well. And Todd Starnes has reported some disturbing things having to do with immigration health issues. Now, remember, the president is basically saying, I'm going to take this into my own hands, which is one of the reasons I raise this in terms of freedoms, because this affects the nation in many, many ways. Joey, I want to play a few clips, beginning with 21. This has to do with immigration health issues, and then we'll go down to what Todd Starnes has to say about people being allegedly silenced in terms of weighing in on this, or medical professionals making statements. Start with clip number 20.
Do you feel that your city then has become almost like a dumping ground?
Of course.
Swirling through this political cyclone, anger at the president.
Impeach Obama!
And claims of a possible threat to public health.
All right. Fairly serious. Let's go to clip number 22.
A Border Patrol union official added to the controversy with a claim that one agent has been infected with scabies, a skin disease spread by mites.
And this is what I fear. These people are already on the streets, and they could be contaminating buses, contaminating other people.
All right, so Todd Starnes, who writes often on social moral issues, and I often see an overlap in things that are concerning us, the two of us. He wrote a book recently about Godless America, obviously a pun on God bless America. So on July 2nd, published an article, medical staff warned, keep your mouth shut about illegal immigrants or face arrest. Clip number 23.
My sources are telling me that we can now report there are three confirmed cases of tuberculosis at a facility in the Austin, Texas area. I also have sources at a refugee camp and at Lackland Air Force Base. And Steve, the nurses there, some of my sources inside that facility say that it is far worse there. They're telling me at least four teenagers are infected with tuberculosis, and that number may in fact be growing.
All right, that was Todd Starnes being interviewed on Fox News. Two more clips, clip number 24.
But the big issue here, Steve, is this shroud of secrecy that's enveloped these facilities. HHS refuses to really go in depth and tell us exactly what is happening. I can tell you right now that many of my sources say they've been threatened. They say that if they speak out, if they speak to the media, they can lose their jobs. They also face arrest.
All right. Look, these are all direct assaults on our freedoms. These are issues where if you cannot report issues, if you have potential health issues, if you have the exacerbating of an immigration crisis for political benefit, these things do affect our freedoms. So what am I supposed to do about it? Well, first thing is, let's not be complacent. Let's not just sit back and say, hey, maybe my team won over the weekend, or stocks are good, or my family's healthy, we had a good church service. Okay, I'm glad to hear all of that, but we're not here just to have a nice life. We're not here just to have our best life now, to paraphrase someone else's words. We're here to make a difference. if there's injustice, we're to be agents of justice. That's why so many of our grads are involved in fighting human trafficking and pro-life movement and feeding the poor and the underprivileged. In fact, on Wednesday of this week, I traveled to the Philippines, and I've got some very special programming coming your way. I think you're going to, you're going to enjoy it. You are going to enjoy some of the programming and, God willing, some of the interviews with our team, some of our Southeast Asian missionaries whom we'll be meeting with over the weekend in the Philippines. And I plan to do some interviewing there. I think you're going to be really blessed by the programming Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Monday of this week. But because we are supposed to make a difference, so many of our grads from our ministry school get charged. They get charged with that vision, that revolutionary, world-changing vision. Not hatred, not anger, not intimidation. No, overcoming hatred with love. And not, rather than intimidating, serving. And overcoming errors with truth. And rather than fighting with human force, fighting with the life and power of the Spirit, with the truth of the gospel. That's why so many of our grads get involved in making a difference, because something gets in their gut and they say, I've got to do something. I've got to do something. Be it serving in the inner city and bringing the gospel there. Some of our grads now on their way to live on an Indian reservation, some of the neediest places in America and some of the objects of the greatest injustice in our nation's history, who have suffered the most. They are going to live among them and work among them and serve. Why? Because they care about them as needy people. So we don't just sit back and say, man, it's bad. Or, okay, I got to vote the president out and get somebody else in. Hey, I did not vote for President Obama, but I did not vote for others running with much enthusiasm. I'd love to vote enthusiastically for someone, but even so, let's just say, and I'm not making a political statement. I'm just making a spiritual statement at the moment. Let's just say Mike Huckabee decided to run. Everybody I know that's close to him says he is a seriously committed Christian. Obviously, I share many values that he shares. He is strongly pro-life. He is strongly pro-marriage and family. He is strongly pro-Israel. I don't know how good he would be on other issues. I trust he'd be good, but I don't. But let's just say. And so this is not a political debate we're about to get into, okay? Let's just say we had someone that I was convinced was a born-again, Bible-believing president who held to many of the same values I hold to. I would still put very limited hope and trust in the government, knowing the government has its limitations and knowing the president has limitations. In fact, I think it's easier for the president to do bad than to do good. It's easier to accelerate the problem than to fix it. I read a quote, I think it was Einstein, who said that the mental energy needed to create, you need more mental energy to solve a problem than to create a problem. Just think about it on a math level, you could pretty easily come up with something difficult. It's more difficult to solve it. So what are we doing? The first thing is we have to stir ourselves and say, okay, I won't be complacent. I won't be complacent. I won't just sit back and complain. I won't just sit back and get discouraged. I want to make a difference. One more quote from Todd Starnes regarding the immigration health issues, clip number 25.
They told us last week that there were only 119 cases of lice reported among the 7,000 young people that have been through the facilities at Lackland and Fort Sill. And they also told us that there were no reports of scabies. So they're having us believe that pretty much there are no major health problems at these facilities, when in fact we have a number of sources telling us otherwise.
All right, so you have this issue, which is getting increasingly complex and difficult by the day, and the porous borders. There is the Charles Krauthammer reply to the president's comments that a fence doesn't work. Then he asked the question, why didn't you have a fence around the White House? Anyway, the immigration thing is part of a larger issue because of the president saying that he will act by executive order. And with End Employment Non-Discrimination Act, with federal contractors, the government will not work with a federal contractor who did not then have Employment Non-Discrimination Act as part of their code of ethics so that you could not discriminate based on sexual orientation or gender identity. What exactly does that mean? How does that work out? There's a reason that this bill has been stalled in Congress over the years. The president says, well, he'll just take action. I say that's not his right. I say that's overreach along with many others. So I just posted this question a little while ago on Facebook and Twitter. What is the greatest threat to our national freedoms today? I'll come back with some responses from you, our listening audience.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, be sure to visit my website, AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. Over the weekend, a couple of articles were published, one on the media's condemnation of Israel on unequal weights and measures when reporting on deaths of Israelis compared to deaths of Palestinians, as if Israel's guilt is greater than Palestinian guilt. You'll find it very eye-opening, the article about the media's condemnation of Israel. And then another article also published over the weekend or early this morning, renouncing Jewish jihad. Say, Jewish jihad, what do you mean by that? Well, Jewish terrorists, religious Jewish terrorists who use their religion to justify murder, why we utterly renounce that as alien, but why it needs to be addressed, as opposed to, in Islam, that jihad can be a fundamental expression of the Islamic faith. So check out those articles at AskDrBrown.org, and click on latest article. Also, if you've not yet watched my debate with Matthew Vines, it's, what, about 10 days back? But it's getting a lot of attention. It's been viewed, 18,500 times just on my site, but it's posted on a number of other sites. So there's a good interest in it. It's short. It's maybe 45 minutes of interaction with a host on the radio show, once you take out the commercial breaks and things like that. But it is really eye-opening, tremendously eye-opening. 866-34-TRUTH. So what would you say are the greatest threats, or is the greatest threat to our national freedoms today? Let me read some of the responses that have come in on Twitter and Facebook. Santiago says, a silent church. That's the greatest threat to religious freedom. Excuse me, to freedom, American freedom. A silent church. Very interesting. Alan, free speech and political correctness going off. John, liberals and PC nonsense. Let me look at Facebook comments. Those were some on Twitter. Katie, the rise of humanism, naturalism, and materialism into the void created by the lukewarm church. So again, what's interesting is putting things at the feet of believers. Seiko, anti-Christian activism to ban religious expression in the name of tolerance. Sarah, lukewarm Christianity. We can't overcome evil when we're complacent. Interesting that Sarah uses that very word that I was using just a few minutes ago, saying first thing, let us be stirred up out of our complacency. First thing, let us not just sit here as if this world is our eternal home. Chad says government is the greatest threat to our national freedoms today. Robert, Islam. Gene, disregard for the Constitution and original intent of the founders. Cheryl, allowing God to be swept out of our nation without doing anything about it. I think it is apathy, getting too comfortable to care, not being willing to put the time into knowing the truth about what's going on. Friends, that's one major reason we're on the radio. Let's see. Akisita, people who do not fear the Lord and refuse to pray or have any type of prayer life. Patrick, our current government. Jason, the government. Sadly, though, I don't see it recovering at this point. I think we are on the downward spiral until Yeshua returns. Dennis, Barack Obama, Michelle, Obama, Melinda, and an American president. Rick, the belief that Christ is no longer relevant today, today living. Dawn, apathy. Teresa, I think all these are things mentioned in the comments. They're all problems, but at the root is probably our church's lack of dedication to put the Lord and His Word first. James, IRS, Federal Reserve, and this administration daring to call a war veteran a domestic terrorist. Curtis, suppression of the truth. Kerry, IRS. Karen, the vast majority of us not valuing them or recognizing them for the precious things they are. Who's the... Oh, freedoms. I guess our freedoms. Tom, fear. Let me grab a few more comments. What's the greatest threat to our national freedoms today? Let's see. Marcia says deception. Melissa, weak, unrenewed minds. Lee, political correctness. Roger, intolerance that calls itself tolerance. Bonnie, the erosion of our civil liberties. Jorge, complacency. David, impeaching God. Joy, Islamists whose sole mission is to eradicate the world of Jews and Christians. Renee, prayerlessness in the church, not to mention lack of patriotism in voting. Stephen, a socialist in the Oval Office. Tim, the greatest thing, single thing that threatens our freedoms today is the Affordable Care Act. Carol, anything that relegates the superiority of the man, Jesus Christ. Chris, a church that worries. One that does not fight from the place of victory. Let me just see a few. Okay. Yep. Okay. I think you get a feel. And hey, if you post it there, I want to include your comments. If I missed some of you, I apologize. But I step back and say, okay, what is the takeaway? Because we got lots of different perspectives. What is our takeaway? To me, my takeaway is that people recognize our freedoms are being threatened from many, many different angles. My takeaway is the recognition that the church is complacent and lukewarm in the midst of society. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm coming to the end of an hour, but you can call now to get in our next hour. May I encourage you to go to the Philippines with me on Wednesday? So, oh man, how can I do it? Well, here's how you can do it. You can help send me. We are going to do a regional retreat with our missionaries between men, women, and children in the Philippines. We have about 50 people there. We have missionaries in Thailand. We have missionaries in Japan. We have missionaries in China. Others have served in other parts of Southeast Asia. We are going to pour into them, some of our leaders, for a few days. Hold my hands up as we go. Your gift of $50 or more, we're sending you my Jeremiah commentary, 550 pages, plus a commentary on Ezekiel and Lamentations. So it's over 900 pages total, and 2 hours of DVD teaching not available to the general public. So $50 or more, it's a good savings on the whole package. Call now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Or go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. My bottom line today, from many, many different fronts, our freedoms are being severely threatened. What we do is wake up ourselves first. Well, it's the day after the July 4th weekend. We as Americans love our freedom. Are we losing our freedoms? Are we still a free nation?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Did something on Friday, July 4th, that I haven't done in quite a while. In fact, I don't remember doing this for quite a few years. I read through the Declaration of Independence. Now, some of you have it memorized, or you have the first paragraphs memorized. I'm familiar with the content, certainly. Maybe I haven't memorized much, maybe a line or two. Many other things I have memorized. Not that. But I was struck by the price that was paid for our liberty and how radical a move it was for our founding fathers. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you on this Monday after the July 4th weekend. First hour, I talked about President's executive orders. I talked about NSA overreach. I talked about even the implications of the immigration crisis and the president saying he's going to take executive order, just take it into his own hands and issue executive orders. Talked about House Speaker John Boehner saying that he will sue the president, and on it goes. I posted a question on Facebook and Twitter that simply asked, what is the greatest threat to our national freedoms today? Comments have been pouring in. I read a bunch in the first hour, and I'll read some more here. But what's very clear to me is this. Our founding fathers were obviously not omniscient. Our founding fathers were a mixed bag. Some of them were, from what we can tell, committed Christians. Others were deists. But they certainly had a vision for the nation. And when my friend Yesu Pottom was here on the radio with me, if you missed the show on Friday, please listen. Go to my website, AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest audio to listen to the show from Friday. But he talked about, as an Indian, his belief that God has a purpose for America still, and that God will shake and awaken the nation still, because there is a divine purpose for America in terms of world missions and world good. He knows what we've exported that's wrong. He knows what we've exported that's evil. He knows that we've had a mixed effect on the world. There's been much good we've done, and there's been harm that we've done. Much good, much harm. And yet he sees a future and destiny for America. What struck me reading about the founding fathers was how radical their move was. Now, I want to put out some questions for you. I want to do this carefully, and I want to do it with some caveats. So let me give you the caveats first. I do not believe that there is any justification for an armed revolt against the government. And in no way am I saying a syllable to seek to provoke that. In fact, I speak against it. My view is that we must have a revolution, but it is a moral and cultural revolution that is gospel-based, that doesn't take life, but gives life, that does not rule by intimidation and force, but by service and transformation of life. Yet I know there are others with other voices. I want to have a discussion on the radio about some of these issues, but please understand, I'm making my own viewpoint plain. So I'm going to allow for a free discussion about issues, but I'm making my own viewpoint plain. So we will facilitate a discussion here, but no one can misquote me in terms of what I hold to and believe.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, everybody, please listen carefully. All right, if you can focus in for a moment. I want to ask a question, but I want to lay out my own views clearly first. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. All right, let me lay it out, and then I'll ask the question. The Declaration of Independence begins, as many of you know. We just celebrated our independence July 4th on Friday. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. Hence, the beginning of our Declaration of Independence, the slogan that rebellion against tyrants is obedience to God. Now, there are some who say that the government has overstepped its bounds. There are some who say the government has gone too far and is now ruling in a tyrannical way. And they say it is time to overthrow the government. Now, I want to make it perfectly clear. I do not adhere to that. I do not adhere to, violent means, to taking up violence to overthrow the government, and God forbid, take it further, using violence to advance the cause of life or family. I mean, that is an absolute contradiction. It's one thing, and I haven't gotten to my question yet, all right? I'm just laying this out because I want to be very careful in the discussion here. It's one thing if I say that if someone comes into your home to attack you, you're a married man, wife and kids, and they come into your home and the person is out of their mind, they're, you know, drug crazed, out of their mind, and they're literally trying to kill your wife and your kids, and you have the power to stop them, even if you have to use force to stop them, it is a Christian thing to do to stop them. Yes, I think we all agree, or most all of us agree, virtually all of us, 99.9999% agree on that. And then we can debate the issue of just war. We can debate the issue of, say, during World War II and fighting against the Nazis, just war. Let's say there was some radical Islamic invasion of our nation. I think that except for the extreme pacifists, and I don't say extreme in a derogatory way, but just to categorize, aside from the extreme pacifists, that we would all agree that this is a just war and that we protect our borders and our families and that we fight with military means against the Islamic invasion if there were one. I don't think there'd be much debate about that at all, except, like I say, just from an extreme pacifist, you'd say under no circumstances do we ever lift a weapon against another human being. That being said, my whole emphasis is on Jesus' revolution. My whole emphasis is on awakening us, stirring our own hearts to righteousness, stirring our own hearts to live right and then to set captives free and to go into the culture with a message of moral transformation through the gospel and to be a conscience to the society. Jesus' revolution, as I've said probably thousands of times, overcoming evil with good, overcoming hatred with love, overcoming lies with truth. Not the way of a worldly revolution. That's my view. Some of you believe that we are getting to a point that is similar to the situation under the King of England when we revolted in the first place. So here's my question for you. I want to facilitate a discussion. 866-34-TRUTH. What would it take for us to have another physical revolution? Let me say it again. I am not calling for this or advocating it. I'm just curious. What would it take? I know many of you are listening all over Texas right now, for example. We've got some great stations blanketing DFW and other parts of Texas. So what would it take to say, okay, we're going to break away as a state? We're going to break away from the government. The government has gone too far. How much overreach would have to take place before you'd say, okay, we're not going to pay our taxes anymore? What would have to happen for you to say, hey, we are at the same place now that we were at with the American founding fathers revolting against the British? I know these are controversial questions, but I'm putting them out for discussion. 866-34-TRUTH. And are there any of you who feel that the American Revolution was wrong because it was a revolution? There are Christians who hold to that we never should have revolted. We should have just trusted God and done the right thing if it was for Christian principle. And then one other question. Then I want to read some more of your comments that have been coming in online. One other question for you. Simply this. Do you believe that there is a divine destiny for America? Do you believe that God has raised up the nation of America with a divine purpose and calling? No, we're not biblical Israel. No, we are not a theocracy. But do you believe that we have been raised up by God? So a few questions. And you can see there's some interconnectedness between them on this first day after the July 4th weekend. Do you believe that God has raised up America, not just like any other nation, but with a specific divine calling, that we have been raised up at such a time as this in world history, that we have been a massive foreign missions force, that we have helped fund the work of the gospel around the world? Yes, we've also done a lot of wrong and evil with our funds and what we've exported. But do you believe, was it Peter Marshall and the Light and the Glory and these types of things, and looking back to the history of America, the origins of America, or miracles of America, that yes, we've committed our sins and we've been guilty of things, and we've been guilty in covenant breaking, and we've been guilty of various things in our history that are egregious, but Israel was also guilty of many things despite being raised up by God. Is there a direct, definite, divine purpose for the nation? 866-348-7884. All right. Let me look at a few more of your comments. That was quite a setup for my simple question there. But I want to be clear. I don't want there to be any misunderstanding. Oh, how do I find the newest comments? Is that easily done? Question I posted on Facebook and Twitter, what is the greatest threat to our national freedoms today? Let's see if I can get recent activity at the top. All right, I knew some of this would come in. Our government, that was Diana. Bradley, our Muslim president, and not unexpectedly, a gentleman who often has a different perspective, Wheeler, said, Muslim, you folks are seriously trying to sell that line. David, a sleeping church. Adam, as an addendum, I also think that the NSA crisis can be explained along the same lines. All right, Adam, let me go and find your other comment. Here we go. As Francis Schaeffer said, the greatest threat to our national freedoms is humanism. It is the worldview that man is the measure of all things, and that views reality as nothing more than material energy shaped by chance. The reason it's such a threat to freedom is that it has no way of coming up with universals such as ethics and logic upon which to base law. Man is finite, and thus he can never, beginning with himself, ever come up with these universals, and thus either the culture has not form, in which case you have chaos, or you have to arbitrarily come up with forms and impose them on the culture to prevent the culture from going into chaos. You saw this very principle in play in how the left reacted to the Supreme Court of the United States decision with Hobby Lobby. In secular views of government, you have not just a jurisdictional, but an ideological separation of church and state. That is, the church and state cannot have the same ideology. This is necessary to secularize the state. However, the problem is that there are many religions, such as Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, that believe that our faith should be lived out in public policy. So in order to maintain their arbitrary forms, they sought to force the hand of employers. I'm reading a comment from Adam on my Facebook page. Once the Supreme Court ruled that this was unconstitutional, the left kept coming out with arguments to the effect that there are religions that believe that the people should be allowed to walk around naked in public, and should we allow that? However, what that points out is that secularism cannot allow religious freedom without resulting in chaos. There is a third option here. Rather than tyranny or chaos, let religion back into the sphere of the state. Allow these religions to debate public policy in the public sphere and argue for bills and laws on the basis of their religion. Of course, doing so destroys the ideological separation between church and state, as well as the idea that there is no objective truth in religion. When you do so, you magically have a form which can contain the religious freedom, and that it, there is object, and that is that there is objective truth in religion because there is a God who's spoken and not been silent. Ah, what he's saying is, let religion right in the thick of the discussion, because religion, God-given gospel truth or foundational truth, has truth to offer to the discussion. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, someone just sent this to me, a journalist, but I was quite aware of this for several days now. Again, another infringement on freedoms, 866-34-TRUTH. This is on Christian News Network. The headline, Chilling Implications, Largest Bank Asks Workers If They Support Homosexuality, by Garrett Haley. The largest bank in the United States now allegedly requires its employees to state whether or not they are supporters of the homosexual lifestyle. J.P. Morgan Chase, headquartered in New York City, is the United States' largest bank with total assets of over $2.5 trillion. The bank has overtly supported homosexuality for several years, appearing at several gay pride events and even offering a number of special benefits to bank employees who identify as LGBT. Now J.P. Morgan Chase has taken their LGBT support even further, reportedly requiring all their employees to voice whether or not they support the so-called LGBT community. According to Princeton University professor Robert George, the bank recently surveyed their workers, asking them to state which of the following descriptions apply to them. Now check out this list. One, person with disabilities. Two, a person with children with disabilities. Three, a person with a spouse, domestic partner with disabilities. Four, a member of the LGBT community. Huh? How'd that get on the list? Five, an ally of the LGBT community, but not personally identifying as LGBT. You're going to be asked for an ally? What does that mean? An unnamed individual who's worked at J.P. Morgan Chase for 11 years first alerted George to the unprecedented survey. The employee told George, who was the chair of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, that the questionnaire had many of us scratching our heads. What? What kind of question was that? The employee had wondered. An ally of that community? What's the alternative if you don't select that option? You're not an ally of the LGBT community? The employee further explained that the survey was not anonymous since it required everyone to enter personal identification information. The implications, he suggested, are chilling. With the way things are going, the fact that LGBT rights are being viewed as pretty much tantamount to the civil rights movement of the mid-50s to late 60s, not selecting that option is essentially saying, I'm not an ally of civil rights, which is a vague way to say I'm a bigot. The worry among many of us is that those who didn't select that poorly placed irrelevant option will be placed on the you can fire these people first list. And Robert George, Professor George, said the message to all employees are perfectly clear. You're expected to fall into line with the approved and required thinking. Nothing short of assent is acceptable. Silent dissent will no longer be permitted. What do you think of that? All right, back to some of your comments. Let me just read a further comment that Adam made. He said this, as an addendum, I also think that the NSA crisis can be explained along the same lines. There's tremendous freedom in a Christian society when there is a where there is a consensus that the Christian worldview should be the foundation upon which society is built. So if we have that fundamental value, we're not going to have Saudi Arabia, where you can't publicly dissent from the faith. You can't convert without penalty of death. You can't just say, okay, we're just going to go, you know, share the gospel on the streets. So no, you can't do that. Adam says there's some restraint of the evil in the heart of man because of the forms which a Christian society brings. Even unbelievers hear the truth that murder is wrong, even if it advances your viewpoints. However, in a humanistic society, which Adam, on the heels of Francis Schaeffer, or following in the footsteps of Francis Schaeffer, is saying humanism is the greatest threat to our freedoms. In a humanistic society, there is no reason for anyone to believe that certain behaviors are universally wrong, even if they promote your viewpoint. The only issue is whether the elite will catch you doing it, because the elite have nothing beyond themselves to defend the idea that such an action is wrong. It is your will against the forces of the elite, and if you win, there are no consequences to pay. So what happens is that the government must become even more intrusive to try to catch people who believe these kinds of things. Freedoms are gradually lost. The elite becomes more powerful. Also, conservative humanism is no better than a liberal humanism at this point. This is not even an issue of right versus left. It is an issue of the fact that humanism cannot provide a sufficient base for freedoms and must be abandoned as the foundation of our society. Adam, I appreciate that lengthy and articulate post. Now, again, I read earlier from the beginning of the Declaration of Independence. When you get to the end of it, there are 56 signatures. 56 signatures. And what I was struck by, and I played a clip last Friday from Paul Harvey, was struck by the fact that these signers risked their lives in signing. We look at them as founding fathers, little realizing the radical nature of what they were doing, little realizing how much this could literally cost them their lives, not just careers, not just their futures, but their literal lives. And yet, we look at them with great honor. We look at them with great esteem. In my work on Jeremiah, I was struck by the degree that he was rejected by his generation. I was struck by the degree that he was opposed on every side. Here, look, when God calls him, right at the beginning, when God calls him, he tells him something. You find it in Jeremiah 1, and then it's repeated in Jeremiah 15, and I'm sure Jeremiah did not grasp the implications of this. It's not that God wasn't being truthful, but Jeremiah had no way of knowing the full implications of what was going to happen. But look at what's written there, because of his calling. Jeremiah 1:10, see, I appoint you this day over nations and kingdoms to uproot and to pull down, to destroy and to overthrow, to build and to plant. So here is a young man, perhaps just a teenager, who's been given all this authority, and he's going to be proclaiming judgment. He's going to be proclaiming bad news. He's going to be proclaiming calamity because of the nation's sin. God says to him in verse 17, so you, gird up your loins, arise, and speak to them all that I command you. Do not break down before them, lest I break you before them. I make you this day, so God's saying to Jeremiah, you do this, and I'll do this. I make you this day, look at this, a fortified city, and an iron pillar, and bronze walls, against the whole land, against Judah's kings and officers, against its priests and citizens. They will attack you, but shall not overcome you, for I am with you, declares the Lord. Whoa, whoa. Jeremiah is going to be opposed by kings, officers, priests, citizens, in other words, everybody. The religious establishment, the political establishment, and the populace is going to oppose him. And for 40 years, he proclaimed a difficult message, but God. And who do we look at today? Do we remember the names of those who opposed him? Hardly. We remember and revere Jeremiah's name, and he's the one who brings the message of the new covenant. Friends, partner with me. Hold my hands up this week. Your gift of $50 or more will help me as I travel to the Philippines this week for a special retreat gathering with our Southeast Asian missionaries. Dozens and dozens of our great team will be meeting with. But we've put together a special package, my Jeremiah commentary, together with 2 hours of DVD teaching not available to the public on Jeremiah. And the commentary also comes with Lamentations and Ezekiel. $70 value, $50 postage paid. Or any gift you can help us with beyond that. Go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the line of fire, 866-348-7884. Talking about freedoms, talking about liberties, and a few other issues of real importance. Can I refocus for a moment on the Middle East? 866-34-TRUTH. Can I refocus on the Middle East? In the last few days, the bombing against Israel has intensified. Now, remember, here's basically the cycle. Cycle is this: three Israeli teenagers kidnapped. They were murdered. It was 18 days before their bodies were found. Hamas terrorists involved in this. I've pointed out the unequal media reporting on these issues. I've pointed out the, well, that's the only way to say it, lack of fairness in the reporting. Murder is murder. Bloodshed is bloodshed. Cold-blooded killing is cold-blooded killing. Israelis killing a Palestinian, Palestinians killing an Israeli. These are all horrible things that are deplorable. I pointed out the unequal coverage in the media. If you don't believe me, read the article that was posted on Saturday. The media condemns Israel again. You find that at AskDrBrown.org. Just click on latest article. And then one that was published earlier this morning, renouncing Jewish jihad. And what's happened is the Israelis immediately began to go after Hamas operatives in the aftermath of the kidnapping of the three Israeli teenage boys. Again, they were killed shortly after being kidnapped, shot dead in cold blood. And Israel's recognized that there were other operatives helping the two kidnappers to make this possible. The two kidnappers with a stolen car with Israeli plates and also dressed as religious Jews so as to deceive the young man who got into the car thinking they were with other Jews, in fact, religious Jews, as I've read the reports. So Israel now begins to retaliate. Of course, Hamas then begins to up its bombings. There was miraculous protections, the best way to say it. That's what those there said about children not being killed by some of the rocket blasts in Sderot, which is closest to the border of Gaza and a constant target for the terrorists. So Hamas has stepped up its bombing. Israel has stepped up its retaliation. And then just an ugly twist that very few were expecting in the midst of this, a Palestinian teenager kidnapped and then brutally murdered, apparently burned to death. So the autopsies have discovered traces of whatever substance related to fire, whatever would be found in the lungs, indicating that the fire was breathed in or the hot air breathed in so that the child was burned alive. And according to the reports and the arrest, it was there's six Jewish extremists who are in custody who are being accused of doing this as a revenge killing. Now, we still don't know this for sure, but that's what we have been told. That's what Israeli police are telling us. Prime Minister Netanyahu called the father of the boy to express his outrage as well. But, of course, now the outrage against Israel is disproportionate. The calling for an intifada. Well, how about an intifada against the Palestinians for the murder of the three kidnapped Israeli boys? No, it doesn't work that way. And you can be sure that the nation of Israel, if this is proven true, the nation will hang their head in shame over this revenge killing. Whereas many of the Palestinians, especially the militant Muslims, will celebrate the murder of the Israeli boys. Again, one of the major differences between Jewish culture and Islamic culture. All of it in need of the gospel, though. We'll be right back.
Fire we want, for fire we please. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends. 866-34-TRUTH. Welcome back to the Line of Fire. By the way, because I did not do normal Q&A on Friday, I had my friends Jason Palm and Monica in from India, and I thought, you know, it's so special to have them with us. It was the one day they were in town. So we did a great interview. You'll be edified, blessed, encouraged by it. Go to my go to my website, askdrbrown.org, click on latest audio to take it in. But I didn't do normal Q&A. So tomorrow, unless something major happens in the news, tomorrow we are going to do a special edition, a Tuesday edition. If you've got questions, we've got answers. So I want to grab a lot of your email questions and take your calls. So if you were looking forward to calling in on Friday and didn't get to, or Tuesday just works better for you, I will be doing that. My article, Renouncing Jewish Jihad, let me share a little of it with you, just going back to the Middle East. I write, there have been and will continue to be Jewish terrorists who use their religion to justify murder. But the difference between Jewish jihad and Islamic jihad is that only in Islam is jihad a legitimate expression of the faith. It is true that there have been religious Jews like Baruch Goldstein who gunned down 29 Muslim worshippers and wounded more than 125 others before being beaten to death in 1994. And it is true that his epitaph reads, he gave his life for the people of Israel, its Torah and land. And it is true that in 2009, an ultra-Orthodox rabbi wrote a book in Hebrew entitled The King's Torah, in which he made outrageous statements like, hurting small children makes sense if it's clear that they'll grow up to harm us, and in such a situation, the injury will be directed at them of all people. And he did this in the name of Jewish law. And it is true that Jewish extremists in Israel have chanted death to the Arabs, especially in the aftermath of atrocities committed against their own people, especially children by Muslim terrorists. And it is true that Yitzhak Ginsburg, an ultra-Orthodox Israeli rabbi, responded to the kidnapping and murder of the three Israeli teenagers with calls for revenge, stating, revenge is a natural, spontaneous reaction, and it is led by a feeling that until I find the power to hurt whoever has hurt me, I will not experience revival. The difference, however, between Orthodox expressions of Judaism and Orthodox expressions of Islam is that these murderous sentiments and actions represent the rarest exception in Judaism. Well, they represent a common theme in Islam, both in ideology and in practice. How many organizations are found in Judaism that parallel substantial Muslim groups like Islamic Jihad, Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, Taliban, Boko Haram, or ISIS? How many religious Jews studying yeshivas are trained in the art of blowing themselves up with bombs? How many rabbinic texts in comparison with Quranic texts can legitimately be used to justify the murder of innocent people in the name of holy war? Now, should I get into it now? I'll just mention in passing that a religious Jew online who referred to himself as jihadist Jew said that I, as a Jewish follower of Jesus, that I am more dangerous than Hamas. I'll probably write about that later in the week. Continuing my article, Renouncing Jewish Jihad, if Jews are indeed guilty of the kidnapping and horrific murder of a Palestinian teen in revenge for the murder of the Israeli teens, there will be national horror, not jubilation. As noted by Ben Dror Yemini, here an absolute majority opposes the murder in the Gaza Strip. Hamas is the government. We have no cries of joy. They have celebrations of joy, and the murderer's families hand out candy. Here, the state stopped funding the old Yosef Chai Yeshiva, which was led by Rabbi Yitzhak Ginsburg, whom I just quoted. There, the murderers continue to receive regularly monthly funding from the Palestinian Authority. Again, this is not to say that the people of Israel, my people, are incapable of committing atrocities, and it's not to say that in coming days there will not be more and more violent Jewish extremists. It's simply to say that to do so requires a fundamental violation of many of the tenets of Judaism. While in Islam, such violence can be easily justified. All that being said, at volatile times like this in the Middle East, we would do well to remember the classic words of Golda Meir, spoken to Anwar Sadat. This is as Israel and Egypt were making peace with one another. She said this, and these are words that are hailed in Israel and hailed in Jewish ethics. We can forgive the Arabs for killing our children. We cannot forgive them for forcing us to kill their children, meaning in war. We will only have peace with the Arabs when they love their children more than they hate us. It's a profoundly important observation. Now, we must come to a place of forgiveness, period. So she's saying we can forgive for one, we can't forgive for the other. But her point is, it's easier for us to forgive you for killing our children than it is for us to forgive you for starting a war with us where we now in war kill your children. Obviously, everyone serving in the military is a child of someone, correct? So I note that the power of hate, which goes far beyond the call to justice, shows no favoritism, and if not checked, will destroy not only Muslims, but also Jews. So I end the article by saying, let us then, without reserve or qualification, utterly renounce Jewish jihad. Now, while I've written this and this has taken place on every level, Jewish leaders are outraged by this, national leaders. Even some Orthodox rabbis have said, even though we don't have the death penalty, theoretically it's on the books, but Adolf Eichmann, the early 60s, was famously put to death in Israel. Otherwise, we just don't have death penalty being enforced in Israel. One ultra-Orthodox rabbi said, if these men are guilty of the kidnapping murder of this Palestinian teen, there should be a death penalty for them. So you have this universal outrage, condemnation, and of course that's going to be the expression. While so much of the Muslim world does not renounce the murder of the Israeli teens, while this is going on, Reverend Stephen Sizer, whom I have publicly rebuked on this broadcast for his not just not being a Zionist, fine to not be a Zionist, but for his attacks on Israel and for his many statements, which I find to be very malicious and damaging. This is what he posted. Oh, let me just find this. Okay. No, not there. Here we go. Just look at this. Reverend Sizer posted, let us pray that when the names of the six Israeli suspects are revealed, the shame of the families and society that not only tolerates but enshrines racism within its laws will lead to such collective revulsion that the cruel death of this young man will not have been in vain. So, of course, he's going to make a statement accusing Israel of racism and saying its laws does not tolerate, but enshrines racism, which is a completely bogus statement when you simply recognize that 200,000 Arabs living in the state of Israel since 1948 have now become 1.6 million Arabs with equal rights to vote. They're not required to fight in the army. Otherwise, they're supported like any other citizen. They have a presence on the Israeli Supreme Court. They have about 10% presence in the Israeli parliament. And if they voted as a body, they would have a 20% presence. No, this is another chance to attack Israel. And then here are some of the comments on his site, and he doesn't delete these. The system of apartheid must crumble. Wicked, evil hearts of stone, speaking of the Israelis. Please, God, have mercy on them and show them in whose image they are made. Another comment, may God not have mercy on them. They are the true devils. And then someone comments, if he has no mercy on them, they won't change. It will sink to ever more depravity, killing and murdering more and more. Can you imagine what their minds and hearts must be like? Slaves to the devil, sick, blind, and hellbound. This is on an alleged Christian reverend's Facebook page, allowing trash like that to be posted. David said on that website, I see the coming decline and fall of the Israeli empire. People power brought down apartheid, South African, communist, Eastern Europe. It can well do the same in Israel. On and on and on. I mean, this is just really ugly, serious stuff, especially in the name of Christianity. All right, bunch more things to talk about. And in fact, do I have time to do this? Do I have time to do this? I think so. I want to take you behind the scenes. It's in the beginning of my Jeremiah commentary, but I talk about a critical instance in the life of Martin Luther King. And I want to share it with you when we come back. I think I have time to do it in this last segment, so don't go anywhere. This is something that will stir you when you hear this about moral resolve and conviction.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, a few months ago, we offered my Jeremiah commentary to listeners, and I think the whole team was surprised by the response, how many people really wanted the commentary. I wrote it with scholarship. I wrote it based on years and years in the Hebrew scriptures and whatever scholarship that I've accumulated over the years in my studies, formal and informal. But I wrote it in such a way that anyone could read it and it would speak to them. And in particular, I thought I'm going to have a lot of pastors and you know, seminary students and serious students of the word reading it. Even if they don't believe that prophetic ministry is for today, I want them to get into the heart and soul and mind of Jeremiah. And as they would do so, it would stir their own hearts. And they would take in that broken heart for a dying nation and passion for the glory of God. So I've got a lengthy introduction to the book. And in the introduction, I tell this one story. So let me share it with you. A pivotal moment in the life of Dr. Martin Luther King is striking in its relevance, taking us behind the scenes into the heart and soul of a very public and influential leader. What was Jeremiah feeling and experiencing, and the rejection, the hatred, and death threats, and going against the grain? And there's something we can glean, little insight, as we look at the life of Dr. King. So this is from Christian History Magazine that I'll be quoting, and it's in the introduction to my Jeremiah commentary. And by the way, we've packaged it together with 2 hours of DVD lectures I did on Jeremiah for our students at our ministry school. They're not available to the general public, but they are available with the commentary. So I'll tell you about that in a moment. By January 1956, with the Montgomery bus boycott in full swing, threatening phone calls, up to 40 a day, began pouring into King's home. Though he put up a strong front, the threats unsettled him. One midnight, as he sat over a cup of coffee worrying, the phone rang again, and the caller said, "Nigger, we are tired of you and your mess now. And if you aren't out of this town in 3 days, we're going to blow your brains out and blow up your house." King later described what happened in the next few minutes. Quote, "I sat there and thought about a beautiful little daughter who had just been born. She was the darling of my life. I'd come in night after night and see that little gentle smile. And I sat at that table thinking about that little girl and thinking about the fact that she could be taken away from me any minute. And I started thinking about a dedicated, devoted, and loyal wife who was over there asleep. And she could be taken from me, or I could be taken from her. And I got to the point that I couldn't take it any longer. I was weak. And I discovered then that religion had become real to me. And I had to know God for myself. And I bowed down over that cup of coffee. I never will forget it. I prayed a prayer. And I prayed out loud that night. I said, Lord, I'm down here trying to do what's right. I think I'm right. I think the cause we represent is right. But Lord, I must confess that I'm weak now. I'm faltering. I'm losing my courage. I can't let the people see me like this, because if they see me weak, they will begin to get weak." Can I quote that again from Dr. King? "If the people see me weak, they will begin to get weak." And he says, it seemed at that moment I could hear an inner voice saying to me, Martin Luther, stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. Stand up for truth. Lo, I will be with you even until the end of the world. Almost at once, he says, my fears began to go. My uncertainty disappeared. Can I speak to you openly, candidly? You say, Mike, that's all you ever do on this broadcast. Yes, correct. That is true. Uncertainty will paralyze you. Uncertainty will take away your ability to act and stand. I mean, just think, if you are in a crisis, there's a fire blazing in a certain part of the house, and you think, all right, do I stay in the room here? Do I stay in the room here and barricade the door and then get, you know, when you're a bathroom, just get wet soaking towels and put them on the floor by the door? And I learned, do I do that? Or do I try to climb out the window? No. There's no time for that. Let me take those same towels, try to wrap them together, like tie them together, and then try to climb out the window, make like some rope because it's too far for me to jump. And if you're uncertain, you don't do anything. That's how some of us live our lives, because we're not sure, because we don't have deep convictions, because we don't have a forward motion, because we don't have a path of action. Friends, I want to encourage you to go before God and know what you believe. I want to encourage you to go before God and determine, I'm going to stand up for what's right. I want to encourage you to be people of conviction. You can't manufacture conviction. You can't just make it up. But out of being with the Lord, out of meditating on his word, out of taking in the words of other leaders who have stood courageously and strongly, you too can be positively impacted. You can be a man or woman of conviction. I would love to get my Jeremiah commentary into your hands. Together with commentaries on Lamentations and Ezekiel, it's a beautiful volume, over 900 pages. It makes a beautiful presence on your shelf, but more importantly, it's a terrific read. And wherever you are in Jeremiah, or any verse you want to look at, just open my commentary and there it is. The introduction will really open your eyes and stir your heart along the way. It costs us to get the volume, but we've packaged it together with two DVDs where I teach on the book of Jeremiah in a way that is really foundation laying. I did it for our School of Ministry students when I was traveling and wasn't going to be there for class. It's not available to the general public, this teaching. And in my commentary, two other scholars wrote their commentaries, one on Lamentations, one on Ezekiel. So all told, over 900 pages. And here's what happens. Your gift of $50 or more, and if you could make it more, that would really help us this week, will not only enable us to send you the Jeremiah commentary together with Ezekiel Lamentations and the two DVDs, but you'll also be holding my hands up, literally helping me as I travel to the Philippines this week. We are going to be meeting with our missionaries. We have a large team in Southeast Asia, in the Philippines. We have workers in Japan, in China, in Thailand, different ones coming from different parts of Southeast Asia, and in particular, our Philippines team. Just 3 days to be together. Then I've got special leadership meetings and public meetings that I'll be doing. You'll hold my hands up and help with the funding of this trip as I travel. And we've got some special broadcasting that's going to be coming your way from the Philippines that I believe will really bless you. So stand with us. You'll be blessed with the materials and you'll help us. Your gift of $50 or more, call now 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Once more, that's 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, if people see you weak, just as Dr. King said, they will get weak. If they see you strong, they will be strengthened.